Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to dun, 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 the 50th, 5-0. Hello, we have made it, the 50th episode of the First Exchange Podcast with me, your host, Lydia Daydahl. Well, can you believe that we made it to 50 episodes? How cool is this? And how fitting that we had a stunning guest in with us this week, Nico Reynolds, also known as the creator, the curator, the mastermind behind Little Porties, and also the fantastic chef on the season, current season of Lodging with Lucy, aka Living with Lucy, that's on Virgin Media at the moment. He came in to talk all about food, his life, his journey, and more food again, which was really, really good because I like food. So we had a really great chat just talking about everything and just so interesting. And like always, the podcast goes from one thing to the next thing and then back again. The beauty of the First Exchange Podcast. But before I let you go, enjoy the 50th episode of the First Exchange. Can I just say, as I say to you every single week, thank you so much to everyone for all your support. So we have got some very exciting news this week. We have partnered up with the wonderful Dubliner Whiskey. For the next couple of weeks, you are going to be able to get your hands on some wonderful whiskey at a 10% discount. Yes, you heard me right. 10% discount off Dubliner Whiskey for all of our wonderful listeners. All you have to do is type in the promo code Lydia, hello, L-Y-D-I-A, my name, and you will get yourself 10% off Dubliner Whiskey. To avail of the 10% offer, head over to www.thedld.com. Not only have they decided to give us 10% off, but they've also given us a couple bottles to give away. So for the next couple of weeks on our social media, you could be in with the lucky chance of getting your hands on your own bottle of Dubliner Whiskey, free of charge. All you got to do is enter the competition. So make sure you stay tuned and keep an eye on all our socials over the next couple of weeks, and that lucky winner could be you. And with all that, I will now let you go and enjoy the 50th episode of the First Exchange Podcast with Nico Reynolds. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Episode 50.
Yeah.
Special one.
The half century.
Half a century. Listen.
Is that the Jubilee or the Diamond Jubilee, or where are we in terms of Jubilee?
my trusty Googler over here is going to find out. But yeah, if you knew kind of where we've come from, when I done the first one, it was sort of like Shane was like, I think you would be really good at doing a podcast. You should come and do a podcast with me. And I was like, okay. And we'd fun. The first one was great, but I didn't know we'd get to 50.
Was it in here?
Yeah, yeah.
Sick. And what did it start off with? Because this is pretty impressive. But like, I could live in here happily.
I've said it many times. I was like, can I just move? I was like, is there a share here? I could just move in. But it's this room, but all the little bits that you've kind of been collecting items, yeah, like the paintings.
It's so well organized. Little tea section.
Yeah, tea. There's some coffee.
Gold refrains up there.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got books. We've also got a little framed The First Exchange.
And I see Dubliner Whiskey has its own shelf up there as well.
Oh, absolutely. What a fantastic
introduction. That brings us into our next segment.
You've done this before, Nico. This is actually so special because it's our first episode that is sponsored by Dubliner Whiskey. So we're very excited now that brands like Dubliner Whiskey would like to get involved with us. So we have a little taste test here.
Yes.
So we're going to have a little taste. I haven't tasted it yet.
Shall
it's
we?
My first time. Yes.
There we go.
Cheers.
Cheers. Honeycomby.
Oh, that's delicious.
I could see myself with a glass of crushed ice, a little bit of mint, a little bit of ginger ale.
Please, by all means, Nico, continue.
Sitting down on the side of a beach somewhere as the shore laps in, that'd be nice.
This is actually delicious. It's the Dubliner Whiskey and it's the... Whiskey and honeycomb. I should have known that with the honeycomb blend. That is actually really, really good, isn't it?
Yeah, I could dance around to that.
Delicious. So anyway, we better get started before I drink too much of that whiskey and I forget why I'm here.
I'm just looking at the bottle there. There's a fair chunk taken out of it already.
That's yours. But listen, thank you so much for coming in.
No, thank you for the invitation.
I know that you're obviously very busy. In the crew, well, you seem to be, judging by your Instagram, you're like cooking every day.
Yeah, I mean, that's just me every day. I'm just kind of, I've always just used it as a little, I don't want to use the word escape from reality, but it's always the thing that has just slowed me down.
Okay.
It's the only thing I've ever really taken my time with that has been of any great consequence to my life, you know?
Right.
And I'm finally fortunate enough in a position to say, I'm doing what I like and I like what I do.
Well, how long has this been going on? I mean, is cooking something that you've always been into? Give our listeners a background.
I was cooking from a young age, just kind of fiddling around in the kitchen. I grew up in, mother's side of my family are Jamaican.
Amazing.
My dad's side are from Strokestown and Roscommon, but that doesn't kind of have the same ring to it.
Doesn't really. Definitely not as sexy.
Yeah, not as sexy, not as much flair, but I mean, we'll try and make it sexy. So I kind of grew up with those two influences on me in the household. I learned that kind of style of cooking from my grandmother. I was always kind of either looking up at her or looking over her shoulder. And I didn't actually ever remember helping out too much. I just,
Being around by osmosis
kind of thing. And then I was like looking at her base flavors and what she used and where she went with them. And then when I started living away, I started translating that flavor so people could kind of understand it. Whenever I introduce that food, people are like, it's too spicy. And you're like, okay, wait, let's stop here. What do you think spicy is? Because I think a lot of people, certainly in this nation, have this preconceived notion of spice is supposed to attack you. It's supposed to be this thing you're supposed to conquer. That, you know, the hardest person in the house is the guy that eats the raw chili. And you're like, are you eating raw onion? Are you doing the same thing?
Yeah.
So I've always tried to, went through a bit of an obsession with it of trying to make people understand the complexity of what a spice is, make spiced food rather than spicy. Yeah. So I was fiddling around with that from a young age, and then I never ever really saw it as getting into a career.
Yeah.
Or not even a career, just earning money off it. And moved down to Argentina when I was 22.
Wow, that's very young.
Yeah, I was close to going to Australia.
Really? That's a big, it's a big jump, Argentina. Were you just looking at the A's on the...
Yeah. I got down the phone book and like...
Agent, Argentina, Australia.
Cancel it. Yeah, I got
Andorra.
Go here, yeah.
So listen, go back to... this idea of your grandmother being in the kitchen and cooking is like fascinates me because I think it sort of resonates with me and my own grandmother and like... You know, straight away when I think about my grandmother, I think about bread and butter pudding, which was like her staple. And she used to always make it. We never knew how she got it to taste so tasty. And so
So here's the thing. I think with that is like, you know, you have to walk into a lot of people who might have a similar story to myself and yourself. And there's that. One of the greatest tastes out there is that taste of nostalgia. It's the almost the exact same thing you've been tasting for, you know, your entire life, and it's almost hasn't varied too much because they've been doing the same things to it. And then I know when I go into my grandmother's house, she's still with us, but it's like it's always the same level that I go in. I walk up the garden, I smell the rosemary, I open the door because she lives in one of those houses where there's always people passing through it, and there's always a pot on the stove. There's always something simmering. There's always something bubbling. There's always something roasting. Mm-hmm. Whether it be the jerk pork or whether it be the escabeche fish, there's always some sort of fragrance or aroma just passing through. And I suppose because mother's side of my family lived, they're in London, but. You know, I get to see them maybe 3 or 4 times a year. But my mother died when I was younger. There was a bit of a disconnect to that heritage. You know, very aware of, you know, the double heritage family living in Ireland is not too many Jamaicans around. There's not too many of Caribbean descent around. So I started when I moved back home, I said to myself, what could I start tomorrow that nobody's really doing, that I know how to do? And currently what I'm doing was is the fruition of that.
Amazing. And the little party, I definitely want to talk about it, but I'm not letting you get past this grandmother thing, because I'm so the reason I'm so interested in it is because I don't know how you feel about life purpose or you know, why we're here, but I have a real big fascination on it, and I love knowing or finding out when someone sits on the chair, you know, you're here for a reason. I've asked you to come on because I've recognized what you're doing is like really great work,
and I appreciate that.
You seem so passionate and just so, you know, you're just spreading a really good vibe and message. So I was like, I have to get him in to talk about it. But do you believe in life purpose? Do you feel that you're following something now that you're meant to do?
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly. But there's an interesting dichotomy with that kind of train of thought process. It's, you could spend your whole life almost avoiding it, and then something comes along, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is exactly why I'm supposed to be here. Now, whether you give purpose to that to that endeavor, or that endeavor gives purpose to you, is it's the same outcome, really, isn't it? It's you're meant to be a part of it, through good fortune and hard work. You know, that purpose kind of comes clearer and clearer, because you can get lost in the plethora of opportunities and that come across your plate. And
did you do anything else? Was there anything before food? Like, did you try your hand in anything where you kind of went, this is not for me?
Well, like, originally when I went down to Argentina, I was just a 22-year-old with nothing going on in my life. Ireland had just come out of the recession. This was like 2011, 2012. So, you know, there was the brain drain again. Everybody was going to Australia. Everybody was going to the US, London, choose your pick. So for me, with that, I kind of had this thing in my mind. It was like, if I do a year visa, and then, you know, years, it's a long time, but it's not a long time to, you know, figure something out.
Yeah.
You want to go through a process. You want to, you know, you want to settle, and you want to make yourself comfortable. And then in that comfortable, there's that kind of, do I get too comfortable? I get too complacent. So, I mean, it's life. You get through, but when you're moving to a different place, you want to go through a process with it. I don't think it was until I came back that I started seeing, I started coming to terms with what we're talking about, that it was more, this is, for the first time in my life, I feel like everything's kind of fit. It's like something I really like doing in a place where nobody's really doing it. And, you know, I have all the opportunities to start it tomorrow. And it's funny when those kind of things come across, you're like, you don't really know you're in that moment until like you're like 3 or 4 months down the line. You're like, oh my God, I'm in it. This is exactly what I want to be doing. Mm-hmm. You just got to be grateful for those such a...
Well, because you're in a very lucky position, because, I mean, how many people are in the world that haven't found what they're passionate about?
Yeah, because I think we're in a tricky time that it's... there's passion, and then there's the innate human condition of just expressing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where passion ultimately comes from, is just being able to express yourself, whether it be through food, art. Maybe you're deadly at doing accounts. You know what I mean? There's no wrong answers. It's like, I like doing this. I want to put everything into it, and, you know, there's winging it and seeing where it happens. I'm definitely just kind of one of those see what happens, kind of just put my heart and soul in something and see what happens.
So when we look at, you know, your journey within food, what is the, like, where is the joy in it for you? You know, is it feeding people? Is it seeing their reaction?
I love feeding people. Love it. Like, I had a girlfriend when she put on so much weight.
I was just about to say, I imagine.
I'm a bit of a
feeder. Yes, you are.
Like, feeder is such a weighted word. Like, it's so weighty. No, I'd like seeing her happy. all the sauces, yes. All the sauces. You deserve all the sauce. You know? it's that part of the, I suppose the... there's a primalness to that gathering, you know. Yeah. I've always kind of looked at food that it's the, you know, there's a few things that separate us from our ancestors now. There's a lot of things that bring us together, and every single culture around the world is an expression of the same whisper or echo. It's your, you know, the heart, or you're kind of, there's a pot on the stove somewhere in every country. You're walking back to it, and you can still smell it. I mean, the conversation we just had there about grandmothers is, I mean, that's a refrain around the world that is, it's going to continue until, you know, the end of our civilization.
But it is, and it's like, you know, it's for me, I'm just an enjoyer of food.
Okay.
You know, I just enjoy eating. But it's that thing of like when you do travel and you do go on holidays or you go for a meal, and it doesn't have to be this big fancy meal. It could be just something off a street stall.
Oh, dude, yeah.
And you just get that like, and then you think back and it just reminds you of a time and a place. And you're like, oh, remember we got those gorgeous, like, whatever.
It's like, what were those things?
Yeah,
like,
what the hell was that? And, you know, like, and you can just almost, like, it is the nostalgia. And you can feel the heat of, like, a hot evening. And just all those different things
I'm there with you.
Right? You know what I mean?
I'm there with you. Because, like, people ask, what's my favorite restaurant in the world? And
do you get asked that a lot?
Yeah, and I know exactly what it is. It was this, I moved to this neighborhood in Buenos Aires. It's like, it was a Peruvian neighborhood, but I remember getting the bus. I started this new job, and I was on this bus route, and when I'd go in the morning, I'd be driving by, and I'd see like five or six people just outside this hole in the wall, and then I'd drive back on the bus, you know, 5 or 6 hours later, same amount of people, I'd walk by it, and I'm like, dude, I have to check this out. Served three things, and it was like a, like this rib sandwich, a pork shoulder sandwich, and like a choripan, which is like an Argentine hot dog, Argentine sausage sandwich more. And that was it. And it was just, the place was open for 23 hours. Like, the coals were never cold.
Amazing.
It was open 365 days of the year. Like, the fat had made a, like, nice big crust on the...
Oh my god, I'm such a creep. I'm actually Oh my god. I'm so embarrassed.
No,
that's all right.
This is what we're encouraging.
Bloody hell, maybe. is right. But yeah, I totally get it. And, you know, it is just when you think about not even places, but also, you know, family. And the one thing that links us all is always a bit of grub. Do you know what I mean? When I go home, my dad's like, right, get the barbecue on, and, you know, everything and anything in the fridge is thrown on that barbecue. And it's just really an excuse for us all to just sit around the table with the dogs and have a glass of wine and catch up, you know. It's like,
yeah, it's the one thing that's just bound us all together.
It is.
Through this hot mess.
This hot mess. Well, there's none of that happening anymore at all. But yeah, so then how long did you spend in Argentina?
I was there for the guts of 6.5 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was a great place to spend the 20s. It just got so complex. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, the first apartment I rented, decent enough area, maybe akin to maybe like a Ranelagh or something.
Yeah.
You know, lively bars, near enough the centre, like nice subway near it, parks and plazas and all around. I was living with two boys from Navan I met actually over there.
You're joking me. You go to Argentina and you end up living with two lads from Navan.
Yeah, like, because it was like the first like year I didn't know any Spanish.
Yeah.
I kind of just, because I was there and I was there for like 2 months, and after 3 days I said to myself, yeah, I need to figure out how to live here.
Yeah.
And then got the phrase book out, learned how to say Coca-Cola and chips and get around in a taxi. And then, yeah, I'd been off the flight like 3 hours. So the first bar I went to, I ended up meeting this lad I kind of half knew, and then looking for an apartment. He's like, oh, there's a spare room here. So it just kind of happened naturally.
Amazing.
But I was paying like 1,500 pesos at the time, and which is 2012. And now 1,500 pesos with the inflation would probably be like a two-course meal and a can of Coke.
A month?
A month. Or, yeah, so that was 1,500 pesos a month in 2012. And now 2020, we're at, yeah, it just, you're just kind of just like, what am I, how am I, where is this money going? And then the everything just changes. And then, I mean, it's kind of like there's an endearing part to it because, like, you know, you're in that age where anything could happen at any given week, which is kind of attractive when you're just kind of like living it. But as I got a bit older, I was like, you know, I kind of want to plot. I want to want to work towards something now rather than just being surrounded by constant chaos.
Did you feel that you wanted to be kind of closer to home, closer to family?
That's the thing as well. It's just like it just kept getting further and further away. You know, and our winters there, summers, so you're kind of constantly living different experiences, and you know, you're not surrounded by too many familiar faces. I mean, I have some of the best friends I have in the world I met down there, but you know, when that kind of, you don't have that security of, you have, it's fine in your 30s, but as you get a bit older, or in your 20s, but as you get a bit older, I think you need to, you need to figure that stuff out. Like,
where feels like home for you now? What part of the world?
Definitely, I moved back in a home for the pandemic. I was still there. Oh, dude. It's great. I do love it. But,
is there loads of people at home? Or
no,
like...
it's just myself, my dad, and his partner. So it's just three.
That's not so bad.
No. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It could be a lot worse. But you know, when you take yourself.
Are you an only child?
I'm an only child.
You spoiled brat. Would you be a spoiled only child?
Yeah, probably. But like, there was never too much I wanted.
Yeah.
So I was never. Like definitely looked after, but I was never. I don't think I was ever. I never demanded. I didn't like sweet things, or I didn't want the next iPhone. I wasn't that kind of kid.
Yeah.
I was happy enough just kind of playing in the back garden. If give me an axe or something, or so light a fire.
Very good. Axe throwing. I support that.
Get them young. You never know when the Vikings could come back.
That is true. But did you end up becoming fluent in Spanish?
Yeah, my Spanish is...
okay. I'm going to test you. You know I am.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was a stage where, like, there was a stage for a good year, maybe about 3 or 4 years into living there, where I wasn't speaking that much English, and I noticed how my English accent changed.
Yeah.
Because you're around people that wouldn't pick it up, or then you kind of have to be more neutral, and then you'd actually end up kind of like, how did I say that again? And then you're just kind of in this environment where you kind of lose yourself a bit. What, do you speak Spanish?
Hablé un poco español.
What?
¿Qué dijiste? I know one line. Yeah. I think I remember the line. It's hablé un poco español.
Háblame.
Háblame. And I was, sí, señor. Gracias.
Sí, señor. Dale.
Go on. Say something in Spanish. Say something. Go on.
Sí, señor. Sí, señor. Bienvenido a todos. I like that. Oh, we started doing that. That's what the account for Nico Duray was. We started doing like the Spanish and like a hola, señor. And like a Dublin accent. It was great. People look at you like, where are you from?
That's so good. But because there is like, you know, a theory that if you go to, if you spend enough time in a country, you'll learn the language without actually having to.
I went straight into a job that was only Spanish, and I didn't have any. I was working in a bar. It was like a high-end cocktail bar, and a friend of mine, his father owned the bar, and I said, listen, I need to just get on the payroll as quick as I can. I need to learn my Spanish. And I was just kind of, well, in you go. And there was like 6 months of like, just kind of like that other, I mean, we do definitely have a luxury in the English speaking world of the rest of the world understanding a little bit.
Yes.
Of so it's funny being on the other side of that. Someone's looking like, how don't you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm new. It's my first day. I'm sorry. So yeah, it was great to get that kind of to get that kind of experience, because stuff like that kind of humbles you.
What was your biggest takeaway from that time in Argentina?
How much I can actually live with nothing. Like, because I went over there with 23 kilos and came back with 14.
In your suitcase?
In the suitcase, yeah.
No way.
But it was that, in that there was a, like, to unpack that suitcase, there was a lot of, that was like a lot of relationships I had, and a lot of the, that kind of feeling of transience never left me, of I could actually pack up and leave at any moment. Which isn't healthy, because it's always going to be there. It's always going to be that little nugget that's going to have to be addressed, of like, what's going on? Are you here or are you not? And I was like, no, I'm definitely here. But then something could happen and you're not.
Where do you think that comes from?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Well, over there, it was definitely that. It was just the fact that, like, I kind of went over there not really having a defined plan of this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to be. I was just kind of seeing what happened. I you know, don't get me wrong, got into myself in some great opportunities and experiences. But, you know, it was, home was always there if the proverbial hit the fan. But I think digging down into that, it's, you know, because I did have a split family. One of my grandparents was born in Ireland. My father spent a lot of time outside of Ireland. My mother outside of Ireland a lot. So, and then my father's side of family, they were a generation always older than me. Or like, because my granddad had my father when he was like in his late 50s.
You're kidding.
Mid 50s, I think.
Wow.
So there was that kind of generation. My family was like, it's funny, do you know when you kind of just have that person in your life that's always just kind of being the same age?
Yes.
Do you know that everybody's got that person that's just like that person's just always been 70, like.
Yeah.
So I kind of grew up a lot around, like, put it bluntly, a lot of death.
Yeah. Wow.
So I suppose I don't want to say tarnish, because that's a wrecked word, but it, altered my perspective on that kind of how long you're here for.
So interesting.
How long you're here for, which isn't always a great thing, because I think it kind of definitely tweaked with my empathy towards certain situations. I do consider myself an empathetic person, but I definitely just have a life goes on kind of attitude.
That's very interesting.
It's not even a refusal, because it's not even there. Things get me down like that, because you have the emotion, then you go through it, and we're still here.
Did it kind of give you a sort of resilience almost?
Yeah, but it's hard to tell where that resilience came from that. I mean, it's your life experience, I guess. It most definitely does.
Because it's funny, death is an interesting one, because it really does, it affects everyone so differently.
For sure.
And the more I sort of learn or study grief and just our sort of like the mechanics of our brains and different things and how our emotions are affected with everything that happens with life, you know, it's really... no one person has the same reaction to anything in life.
No.
And it's all built on our, you know, environment and how we were raised or what we're around or our belief systems.
This is it. And it's that thing can, like, again, it's a two-sided double-edged sword that can be useful or it can be completely detrimental to how you want to perceive the world.
Yeah.
So you want to perceive the world with that kind of, you know, the mantra of like that kind of, it's almost nihilistic of what's the point, why are we doing, where are we going, everything's going to perish and die anyway.
Yeah.
Look at that flower, it's not going to be here in 3 minutes.
It's nice now, but it's going to die soon.
Yeah. I mean, as nihilistic as it is, there's a certain degree of truth to it, but again, how do you want to look at that? It's like, I don't want to use the tropes of Carpe Diem or anything, but I just did.
You'd be welcome to on this podcast.
But look, listen, I'm sitting here, I've just eaten a nice kebab, and I'm sitting on some honeydew Dubliner whiskey.
Listen, let's drink to that. I'll have another sip, although it kind of went to my head. Oh yeah, cheers! Sorry, how rude of me. Cheers.
Get the clink.
You should come in every week.
Well, sure, that's the end of lockdown. I only got that, actually, delicious. That kind of resonated with me yesterday when I saw, like, 1st of December, and I was like, oh man.
Is that when it's over?
Yeah.
So it kicks in tonight, midnight, until the 1st of December. Well.
Here we are.
This is it. When someone says, Where were you the day of the second lockdown? I remember it well. I was drinking honeycomb whiskey with Nico at the studio with Shane.
Throw in a jacuzzi. Some glitter, some balls, you know.
Oh, there'll be arms and legs added onto us. Absolutely. But let's go back to this brain. And your childhood. Okay. I find it very interesting, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, no worries.
Because I just am so fascinated by how people end up who they are. And what has happened to them in their lives to take them on that course. Not necessarily what has happened to them in like a bad way, but...
What happened to you? What do they do to you?
What do they do to you? But like, how does one person end a certain way and how does another? I just find it really, really interesting.
No.
So in terms of like when you look at your own life and sort of saying like growing up and that sort of having death around you and having this...
I mean, it wasn't around me, but it was definitely... I suppose it was when I lost my mother. Like,
how old were you when your mum died?
I was 10.
That's very young.
Yeah, but it was a brain hemorrhage. So she went out the door. Last words I remember her say was, "As long as there's petrol in the car, I don't care." She's kind of having a conversation with my dad, and I mean it was an innocuous conversation, but that stuck with me. As long as there's petrol in the car, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then just get the phone call about 4 o'clock, and then I was in school, and that was the end.
God.
Well, not the end, but because I don't visit her grave or anything.
Is there a reason?
She's not there.
Yeah.
She's not. That's not where she is. She's there. She's in the music I listen to. She's in the dances I do. She's in the I've got her lips. I think that's where she is. She's not buried in the ground. Like we are part of the. You know, the Abrahamic religions that, I mean, all societies have done it with the tombs, and we respect the dead in that way, but I just never felt it. I never felt that that going there would satisfy me. Now, don't get me wrong, I have been there. Last time I was there was last year, and then I went with my grandmother and my uncle and my father, and that was pretty emotional. It was nice to get a good cry out, you know?
Yeah, sometimes you need it, right?
Yeah. I cry at weddings.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why?
There's something about the collective emotion that gets me, and it's just the whole magic of the moment. It's that one pinnacle, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody looks so pretty, and there's
such an effort. Yeah.
There's like roses, and then just like sunset. I mean, it's just a gorgeous scenario to be in, like. But yeah, with the death, because father's side, and then my father's side of my family was like, because they were the older generation, like the only time I'd really see people was at funerals.
Yeah.
My aunties and my uncles, and then.
And it's funny, the older you get, that kind of is the natural, kind of what happens.
This is it, isn't it?
Just see these people at funerals and, you know, and then you spend half the funeral being like, I know, I'm definitely going to catch up. I promise I'll be in touch more often. And it's just like this guilt of, I know I'm not going to.
Yeah, it is.
We'll go for a coffee.
I've started making a concerted effort with that kind of stuff, like just to, you know.
With people.
When I think of someone, just send them a message.
This is a very, very good. This is a very good way to live. Yeah. I would be of that very same thinking.
Yeah.
And so it's funny when people are on the other end of it. Some people that know me very well would be like, okay, that's just the idea. Sometimes I'll just tell people, just want to let you know I love you. You know, it's just that like when you see someone when you have a feeling, you should express it.
For sure.
So what for you? What is it? What was the reasoning where, you know, why would you be that expressive
to message to reach out people?
Yeah.
Like there's one of something I've been started doing over the last maybe like month or so. Just as an example, like I went on a dating app there for the first time in a couple of years.
How exciting!
Not really. It's an interesting time to be dating because it's just like. Do you want to walk down the canal?
Yeah, like literally, do you want to like go on have a Zoom quiz?
Have you done that?
What?
Have you done that?
Not a date, but I've done a Zoom quiz, yeah.
Do you know anyone that's done that?
A Zoom date?
A Zoom date?
No.
I'm so intrigued.
I don't think anyone would tell you if they did.
I'm so intrigued, like, It's such an interesting.
I mean,
level
I don't know. I don't know if it will be
human communication, like
because I do have a Fight Connect TV, which is like a combat sports platform, right? So during lockdown, I've done a lot of.
You have what? What is it?
It's called Fight Connect TV.
Fight Connect TV.
This is only my side hustle here. This is my girlfriend. My wife is Fight Connect TV.
Oh yeah, mistress.
But basically,
she's a fine mistress.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But it's a combat sports platform, and I interview fighters.
Oh, sick.
So during lockdown, obviously, because I usually do events on the weekends and I go to them and stuff, I couldn't do that. So I was doing live Instagram interviews.
Okay.
And that was bad enough. So I don't, and that's like with people watching live.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would be okay with them or if I would enjoy a Zoom date or like a FaceTime.
I mean, it's like anything. Once you do it like for 10 minutes, you're kind of like, the water's not that cold.
Yeah. Kind of like,
yeah.
You know, like maybe if you're having a couple, maybe if it was someone you had been on a couple of dates, yeah, that's different.
Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued. It's like, how does it end or like, what do you... Do you both have dinner at the same time or...
Do you say like, okay, now it's... Okay, so I'm here until 7:30 and then 7:30 comes, you're like, right, I have to go.
Yeah.
Are you like, that was the doorbell?
I've got this thing.
You know? I've got another Zoom date.
So lined up in your Google calendar.
Sorry, I don't want to be like, I really like this guy. Yeah. But yeah, it's an interesting time because I... How old did you say you are, 32?
I'm 32, yeah.
I'm 36. So I can remember...
You don't look it at all.
Thank you very much.
No, for sure.
That's all the fighting that I do.
Do you fight?
Well, not right now, but in the past.
What is this? I hope not.
Yeah, I do jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai.
Oh, nice.
But I compete in jiu-jitsu, but not in Muay Thai. Because with my job, it's you don't want to get punched in the face. And then
yeah,
and
how's that
camera.
Going at the moment with the...
Jiu-jitsu is closed because obviously close contact.
I mean, you're hugging someone for a long period.
Sweating in their eyeball. You know, it's very, very... Muay Thai, still do Muay Thai because obviously we can just hit the bag and stuff like that, so you can train on your own.
Sick.
But so really good. But where was I going with this? Oh yeah, the Zoom. No, what were we saying there before? I'm just thinking about fighting people now. Gone. See you later.
There's plenty of them outside. Shout at them from the window.
Yeah. Age.
Mm.
Dating and age. Mm. So who were we talking about this before? We talked about something dating on here. Oh, it was, we had a really good relationship coach on. The girl is called the relationship coach. She's fantastic.
Okay.
Right? So we brought her on to talk about it, but then she was like, you know, I was just asking her loads of questions and she was like, is this about you, Lydia? I was like, yes, it is. So she was like analyzing and different things. And then she was talking about like the dating app things freaks me out because what was starting to happen is I would match with someone and then they would find my Instagram and they would DM me on Instagram or it would be someone who knew me from Fight Connect TV be like, are you the girl who does all the fighter interviews? And I'd just be like,
it's invasive. Like, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. It's a little bit like this is just... You just kind of want a little bit of...
A distance from...
Anonymity? Is that the right word?
Anonymity.
Anonymity? What is it?
Anonymity.
Anonymity? What is it? Oh my God!
An ant on humidity?
So, what I remember when, you know, when a dating was like, for me, you go to the pub.
Yeah.
And you go to the bar. Yeah. And you ask for a pint of Guinness. Uh-huh. And while you're at the bar, you're like paying for your pint. And then you turn your head and there's someone sitting there having a pint.
Yeah,
and you're like,
hey,
what's the story? He's cute. Yeah. And then you start chatting. Then it's like, you know, where are you going later? Oh, I'm going to head over to whatever. Might see you there.
Nice.
And then you go back to the table. Girls, we're going over there later on.
So,
you know what I mean?
So this is interesting because I was doing like on the date. I was on the dating scene because I mean, it's undeniable that our country's centered around going to the pub or an alcohol or social situations anyway.
Yeah.
But I was on the dating scene down in Latin America and it's a whole other ball game that I had to like. Yeah, what do you mean you don't go to the you don't go out for drinks kind of thing? And you're like, what do you mean you go out for drinks when you're what?
They're
like,
no way.
It's just kind of culture. Like, because it's very, very much like the, I mean, Western culture is obviously invasive everywhere.
Yes.
There's shades and degrees of it, but I mean, the Latin culture is like, let's go dancing, and you're like
on a first date.
I remember I went on this date with this girl and we were dating for a while and she was a tango dancer. And I was just like, just like it said in the brochure.
This is exactly it.
I was like, oh my God, go did you meet anybody to go tango? Why, actually, yes, I did. So we used to go dancing tango, and I remember I walked in and I was like, oh, everybody knows how to tango here, man. This is going to be, it's going to be interesting, because it's a completely other rhythm. Like, for example, do you know when you, somebody puts on a jig or a reel, like everybody in the nation's going to know when to stamp their feet and when to clap and when to shout. I mean, those rhythms go around the world, so you're kind of introduced to this new rhythm, and it was the tango, and I remember the dance teacher was like, what are you at? Like, you moron, like, just listen to the music. I'm like, ah. But yeah, you go dancing, and then you know, things like that, and you know, not everything was ever centered around alcohol, so you kind of
amazing. Yeah, so you would dance on a first date with someone without drinking?
I had a girlfriend there from Venezuela, and she was loved her salsa. So
I mean, oh, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
aren't we? We're doing it wrong.
Going out, you walk into a club. It's four in the morning. You know, you've got tacos and margaritas in your belly, and then let's get on the dance floor, girl, and start spinning around. You know what I mean?
That's amazing. There might be something in that. You might have to bring a little tango salsa flavor. To Dublin. I'm sure there is little things.
I'm in no way qualified to teach, but.
But I was going to ask, can you dance?
I can dance.
I can. Up you guess.
there's enough space for it.
Oh, so good. But yeah, it's a minefield.
Yeah, with the dating, it's just like I don't know if there's been a generation before that has just had so much to care about.
Mm.
And that's the kind of part that gets overwhelming. It's exhausting.
Do you think that social media is to blame as to why people are on?
Social media is a tool. We can't go around run around blaming things.
Mm-hmm. But is it a tool that is maybe having a negative effect on, we'll say, the relationships, in terms of, you know, there's such a new interjection now of different things with social media, whether that is like,
it's easy to ghost people.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what something I've been doing over, like, with
ghosting
the,
people.
Yeah, yeah. I'm mad for it. No, like to be like I have ghosted, but I started messaging people over the last 6 years. I was like, listen, what are you doing now?
Oh, I'd love that. I love this type of thing.
Like for example, there was this girl we had met. Oh, I'm not going to name her.
Don't name her in case I get sued or something.
Yeah, I had met her on one of the dating apps. I think I was on it about 2 weeks, and I said, actually, no, this isn't for me. We like moved to WhatsApp, and then nothing ever happened. But I said, hey, I hope you're well. Just wanted to drop you a text instead of leaving you hanging. I know how these apps can be sometimes. Doesn't mean you can't get an answer. I went on a date with someone, and I'd been chatting to before. We kept talking and see each other. I hope you're well.
That's a really nice message.
It was just to you know.
So this is you texting this girl that you sort of ghosted.
Well, it was like before the kind of ghosting happened. Like we didn't text for like a week or two, and then I started doing things like that, and then.
Did she write back?
She did write back. She said, "Yeah, thank you very much for the message."
That's a really nice message. Yeah, well done. I haven't been as mature in my dating.
nor have I. But like, there's you're always going to be the. You're not going to be the hero in everyone's story.
No, I have to say, these days I'm a lot more mature. I definitely have a lot more respect for people's emotions. But when I started dating originally, like when my ex-boyfriend broke up, this is at a time where like my life was changing considerably.
Uh-huh.
I was starting jiu-jitsu, so it was many years ago. But I went on like Tinder or something, and I'd match with some guy. God, I hope he never listens to this. But I'd match with this guy from America who'd done jiu-jitsu, right? So I was like, this is it. A guy who does jiu-jitsu in Dublin.
Yeah. What's my
going to get married.
What is my ring this is size? It.
And so we went, and literally, I talk a lot, and I probably have like narcissistic traits because I love telling a story about myself.
Yeah.
And I just was like, holy mother of God, how do I get out of this? I cannot listen to this guy talking anymore. He was just...
Didn't give it back.
It was literally like I was his therapist, and he was just talking and talking and talking. So anyway, he's talking, and we're sitting in like the outdoor kind of like... a seating area, And he was talking, and whatever, there was like these girls having all the fun right behind us. And whatever happened, my eyes moved and I was just like kind of looking at the girls having all this fun. And I was probably thinking, Jesus, I wish I was out with all the girls. And he said, he clicked his fingers and said, sorry, could you keep your eyes on me when I'm telling a story?
He did what?
He clicked his fingers. Nico, he clicked his fingers at me.
No, that's enough.
And said, can you keep your eyes on me when I'm telling the story? So I
the audacity
shook at this. So I was still shook, and he my drink had finished, right? So he was like, oh, it's my round. I was like, oh god, yeah, okay. And he was like, what we have,
you
so we said,
I'm so enthralled.
He went to the bar. So when he was at the bar, I just grabbed my bag and I was like, fuck this, I'm out of here. I couldn't even do it. So I done a burner and I got to the front exit and I just looked at the security guard and I just went, if that guy wonders where I'm going, oh, you didn't see me. And he just started breaking his shit laughing. I just ran and I got on the dart. And I remember being in the dart station.
Have you heard this one before?
I hid behind a pillar in the dart station. Like, I was so freaked that he also was going to get the dart.
It's like you robbed all the money.
Literally, worst experience of my life. And from that day, I was like, I'll never do it.
I'm too much of a coward to try anything like that. I'd probably just sit there and grit my teeth until it was over.
It was so bad. And I would like to think that I would be very...
I need to know the scenario. How many drinks had you?
I had one drink.
That was the first drink?
First drink.
Damn,
yeah.
And he clicked his fingers and whipped out that?
Lads, it gets worse. I blocked him on everything, okay? Like WhatsApp, like Instagram, everything blocked. And... I don't know how it came out. It was literally about 9 months later and I got a message on... No, I had blocked him on like, what's that old app that we used to use? Viber? Is it the message? Viber. And I got on WhatsApp and he messaged me then about 9 months ago going like, hey, so I don't know if you remember, but we were out for drinks and you totally like left and I was after buying you a drink and I just wanted to tell you that I think you were really fucking rude.
Oof.
And I couldn't even reply to it. I was actually so embarrassed. He was right. Like it was a really shit thing to do, but like it made a great story. So
yeah. Don't let the
swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, this is it. That is gas.
So yeah, now you tell the horrible dating stories.
Horrible dating stories.
What's your worst one?
My worst date.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's my worst one, but it probably rang somewhere in the middle. It was this girl. Yeah, we met at a bar. We kind of clicked. She was from the US, and we got on a few dates. And then she sent me a message like, "Let's come over. Let's cook some dinner."
I was literally about to ask, has anyone been brave enough to cook for you? Tell me she cooked.
She cooked. What did she make? She had some like mango salsa and salmon dish. It was dope. But on my way over there, I'm like about 3 or 4 blocks away from her house. And, you know, this is the, tonight is the night kind of energy. Tonight is night kind of energy. The sun was shining. I had my struts on. The wind was going through the willows. It was all happening. Like the bluebirds on your shoulder, you know. You know what I'm talking about. And I'm about like 3 or 4 blocks away from the destination or from her house. I got some nice clothes on and the nice aftershave and everything else. And there's this, it's quite popular in the homeless in Argentina. They get their carts and they go around and pick up a lot of cardboard, like cartoneros, mm-hmm. Like the cardboarders translation. But he was a little kid, about 12 years old, and he's trying to get it on his cart. And he's like, Senor, can you help me? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. And so I walk over, the two of us are like pushing this. Like, it was like, fuck, this is hell. It looked a lot lighter on the other side of the road. So we're pushing it up onto his cart. And then like, and he's like, oh, thank you. And I look down and I'm just like from my shoulders down to my quads, I'm just covered in this like gunk. And like, I couldn't go home. So I just like knocked on her door, stinking of bin juice, and just like wrecked her carpet. Oh my god! I don't know how she put up with it. But she did.
I thought you were going to say she couldn't cook, so I left.
Yeah. Like, what is this? Make it again.
How dare you make it again?
Yeah.
do you enjoy having being cooked for? Do you prefer to be in control of the kitchen?
So my my eating regime is like, for the first six hours of my day, I have really, really regimented. Like, everything I want to eat, I'm going to read, because I have no idea what 3 o'clock onwards is going to hold.
Okay.
So I like to indulge in both sides of my psyche of that, like.
Very cool. What time do you get up at?
So, like, my perfect, like, at the moment, I'm getting up at about, you know, 7:30, 8:00.
Okay. Yes.
But my perfect routine is, get up at 7:00, because I'm living down by the beach at the moment. Just gonna straight up, just bring my house keys, just walk down to the beach, watch the tide come in.
Would we have a little swim at that time of the morning?
I'm not sandy man, so I'm not. I'll just kind of just watching the tide come in, watch the sunrise, and there's a little chin up bar. I might do a little stretch. Don't bring any music because, you know, I'll be surrounded by music for the whole day, so I just kind of have a nice little clear head.
Very good.
Drink loads of water, and then I have the same thing every morning: sardines or an oily fish, 2 fried eggs, and again some cornbread.
Wow!
And
is there any reason for this?
The fish,
the cornbread, like,
so
what's...
Myself and my grandmother, we practice a lot of fasting. So I used to fast, and I found that meal was one of the best introductions to food again. Because it had everything I needed was, you know, a little bit of fat, the protein. And then I just ended up sticking with it. I'd fast for about 32, 36 hours. Sunday to Monday, or Sunday to Tuesday morning.
And your grandmother used to do that as well?
She used to do it on Monday till sundown. But we were both practicing it. We both used to do it. So, like, it's not like we were in great contact with each other, but I'd do it on one day and she'd do it on the same day. So I knew we'd kind of have that level of connection to each other.
Wow. What was her reason for doing it? Was it for kind of health reasons?
She would do it for the, she's practicing Christian, so she'd do the truth for the truth through the spirituality of it. And then, like, you know, I started reading it, and it's like there's cultures around the world that have been practicing for a while, and, you know, you kind of started learning about what actually goes into your body. And then for the cooking for myself is, like, I could be in the restaurant for, you know, for 12 hours and actually eat absolutely nothing, and then you kind of get into this cycle of you're surrounded by food, you're just kind of constantly picking at it, you end up not eating anything. So I try to keep that part of my diet really, really regimented, that I'm not, it's a dangerous thing to go into a kitchen hungry. And then I like to experiment. So I like to, you know, just
you have to taste.
Yeah, well, I like to, like, one of my favorite things to do is just put on, like, an old 50s jazz a record in my ear, and then just wander through markets and just see what my brain can come up with, and then just go home and cook it. So I've absolutely no idea what's going to happen from after about 3 o'clock.
It's the way that is the right, am I the right title to give you a chef?
I feel like that's
a bit of a boring title.
No,
you seem a little bit more exotic than a chef.
Is it the woolly jumper?
What is your title?
I don't know.
Creator?
I'm just in an interesting position now, because what I was doing has changed into something else, because I've been kind of slowly moving into the media side, which has been super fortunate.
The star of the new season of Living with Lucy. What is it now? Lounging with Lucy?
Lodging.
Lodging with Lucy.
No, that's Friday night. myself and Lucy. Man, she's the best.
It's just so brilliant, because obviously Living with Lucy she goes to the celebrity's house, but now it's the guest house, and you're like the chef that's creating all the food for all these celebs that are coming into Live with Lucy.
Yeah, it's been so interesting. As I was saying earlier, it's like getting invited to a party where you know no one, and then Lucy's just she's got this incredible grace to her that you just kind of instantly feel comfortable around her, and then, like, there's no real moment where it's like kind of stop start, it's just how you're kind of straight into it. And then I hadn't been around that style of filming before. I've been around filming, but I've never been around that kind of fly in the wall type of filming.
What kind of filming would you have done in the past?
Well, like, if I'm talking directly to a camera about a recipe, like, yeah. I'm comfortable.
So would you have done a lot of, like, two camera, like, do you do your own YouTube channel? Like,
I'm going to hold off for the YouTube channel for a while. I'd like to do something like that, right? And yeah. I'm just not in the position really to do it at the moment. Like, I say that to myself, but that stuff is definitely a commitment.
Yeah.
You want to be grinding at that stuff. You want to have a good video editor, and like, I mean, I could try self-producer, but I mean, I want to have a message first. That was always what I wanted to do with Lil Porty was when I set out, I wanted to go two ways and see if I could do them together, and one was doing the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to do like a line of spice rubs. And hot sauces. And then I remember getting a review from Gillian Nellis. She was then at the Sunday Business Post, and it was the first review I got, and it was brilliant review. It was unbelievable. I was like, I'd been open for like 3 days. I get this review off this like highly respected journalist, and I was chuffed. But in it, she had this line. She's like, he's a charming host. He'd be good on TV, I reckon. And it kind of, you know, when something's like kind of brought inside the realm of reality, you didn't really think it. And you're like, huh. I kind of, huh. Huh. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it kind of just sat with me for a while, and then just kind of, it wasn't even like it was marinating or anything, but it was definitely there. And then all this stuff started happening, and then I kind of got invited onto the live cooking on Ireland AM, and then do other bits and pieces for brands and things like that. So kind of just started happening so organically, and then I just kind of say, oh, there might actually be something here, because I never truly honestly believed it myself.
But it seems like it's very natural to you. You know, it doesn't look, sometimes, you know, people who are taken from one line of work and put into sort of the spotlight or the media end, they can sometimes, it can show, you know what I mean? They can be like, this is not my comfort zone, you know what I mean? But you're like watching you on TV, you look very natural when you do it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about TV. You can, whatever the producers on your side want to make it look like is like with something like the live segments on TV. It's like you've got 8 minutes to talk about something you like, and you want to. I try to have something to talk about, like it's something that's always interested me about food, and what is a message I try to get through with Lil Porty is like, for example, do like, you know, 25% of Jamaicans are ethnically Irish.
Well, this is something I did know, right? Because I watched a documentary before on the I think it's called The Black Irish,
yeah,
and it's about all these Irish men and women who emigrated to Jamaica
It wasn't exactly an emigration.
It's not an emigration. What is it? I don't know.
Your man Cromwell emigrating people to.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Hey, kids, you're going on an emigration.
Okay. Maybe I missed that bit. But what it was fashion, because it was all these like really cool black Jamaican men with Irish accents.
West Cork accents.
It's the best. It's actually brilliant.
Because the island's called Montserrat.
Right.
So it's the only other nation that has St. Patrick's Day as its national holiday.
You're kidding.
I am not.
No way.
Yeah. And there's like in Jamaica, there's a Sligoville. Others, Kelly's, O'Rourke's, O'Reilly's.
Shut up.
Have you
been there for Paddy's Day?
No.
I wonder how they celebrate.
I've seen that the in Montserrat especially, there everybody's got the green frocks on, and
no way.
Some of them still have red hair. They're very aware of their history of why they're there and who they are.
Really?
It's like, I mean, it's unfortunate something like race can divide suffering like that, because at the end of it, nobody wanted to be there, because it was the Irish indentured servitude was the cheapest form of slave trade before the Africans started getting picked up. So, you know, it's an interesting that shared suffering of people across the world.
Yeah, wow. Did you do a lot? Did you learn a lot about it? Do you naturally have a lot of interest?
It interests me, and that kind of stuff, especially with the food. Like for example, you know, there must have been a 20-year period in our own history when the potato was first here where people were like, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah.
What is, like, what is this thing? Like, it's from Peru. What was it?
Is a potato from Peru?
Yeah.
I know. I don't know.
Like, the first recorded planting is like 1598, which is not that long ago for it to be in the lexicon of, oh, Irish people. Oh, yeah, potatoes.
Wow.
And now it's the most Irish thing you can possibly conjure.
That's
so
very interesting.
My whole thing with the food is like, yes, we are at this kind of moment now, and it's kind of been so exacerbated now with everything that's going on in world politics that, you know, in 100 years that it's going to be, I mean, these Turkish lads downstairs, are we going to have like a Galway kebab?
Yeah.
You know, are these cultures going to start mixing? And then it's just like third generation. That's going to be, oh, but this has always been here, hasn't it?
Yeah. Let's hope so. That's the beauty of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything's a whisper of what came before. It's that kind of just eternal migration of people.
Yeah.
Like year and ever. It's this present that we're in right now has happened many, many times before.
Mm-hmm.
We're just kind of in the middle of a cycle.
Do you feel, is it important to you to introduce an Irish audience to Jamaican flavors, your heritage?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is where I've been coming from. Like, my hand, I look like I've some kind of blood disorder. I've been
chopping,
shaving cabbages is what I was doing today. And red cabbages, my hands are blue, and then I moved on to the red onion. So there's a nice tint of pink in there now.
So what are you preparing for?
So I'm doing a takeaway box this weekend.
So this is with Lil Porty.
This is with Lil Porty.
I haven't tasted Lil Porty yet, but I am going to. Okay, 100% will. But yes, when I put it into my group chat, because all the girls are always like, who's on this week? And I said, I have this guy called Nico Reynolds, and before I even got to say Lil Porty, two of the girls were like, been there, Lil Porty, oh my god, nice place. They're like, sick. Real foodies. And they were like, that's delicious.
Oh, that's amazing. Nice.
Yeah. So they
tell them I said thank you.
I will indeed. And they'd like to think of themselves as a tough crowd to impress.
Oh, really?
Yes. So go ahead. You're preparing for little takeaway boxes.
Yeah, so for example, a couple of the dishes, like the dish I did this week was actually inspired by, so it's called a Jamaican shepherd's pie. So I kind of started doing these dishes that look exactly like a dish that you're familiar with, but it's completely different.
Yes.
So the Jamaican shepherd's pie, but it's spiced with like the cinnamon and allspice and scotch bonnet. So it's got a bit of heat to it. And then the lamb is actually smoking at the moment. So we're going to smoke it for about 8 hours and we'll shred it up, pass it through with some jerk sauce, and then simmer it down again in a bit of Guinness. And then with the crust is like this potato and sweet plantain with some parmesan.
I've never tasted plantain, but it sounds amazing.
Like, if I'm ever committed of a heinous crime and I'm offered my last meal, it's just going to be plantain and salt.
Really?
Yeah.
Fried
plantain and salt.
What is the texture? What is the flavor? Ooh.
Doesn't that look tasty?
That looks tasty, ladies and gentlemen. Oh yeah, that looks really, really good. Look at the way it's like just so nicely browned. Like it's not burnt, Shane. No, it's just browned. Delicious. Plantain, texture and taste.
Texture and taste.
I always see it when I walk past any of the African markets and stuff.
So two things. Like I prefer green because green is kind of more. You treat it more like you would like a potato. You could fry it, you could boil it, and just like that fried with a little bit of salt is just ambrosia of the gods. And then when it gets a bit more mature, it has almost like a sweet potato kind of quality to it.
Oh yeah.
It is
delicious.
It's everything.
I'm gonna have to try this out. Yeah. Right. When we have a guest that comes on, we always put up on social media, and we always say, well, you can ask a question. So I'm going to go into the question box and see what your adoring public would like to ask you. Okay. So this is from Kieran Devadas, and he says, massive Lil Porty's fan.
Oh, nice.
Delighted to see you on here. What is your favorite ingredient to use when cooking?
favorite ingredient. Pimento. Like allspice. It's called pimento, but pimento. When I think like during the British colonization, during the trading,
yeah,
it smells like cinnamon, it smells like cloves, it smells like nutmeg, so they just called it allspice.
Amazing. What about a vegetable?
Plantain. Yeah.
A meat.
Your favorite fish. Yeah.
I'm just not a fish person.
No?
No.
But like fish is such a varied word.
It is. And I just don't think I've been served fish properly.
Okay.
That's what I think it is.
And it's just put you off it forever?
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what it is. I got a really bad salmon fillet once and it was really badly burnt and I ate the skin thinking it was the fish, but it was the skin. But it was really bad burnt and there was bones in it and it just put me off, Nico. I couldn't do it.
No, I can see it. I can see
yeah, it was the stress. You can see the stress. I can see the angst.
I don't want to bring it up.
But I've gotten very, as I've aged, I've gotten very good with food. As in I'm able to try anything and enjoy anything.
Except for
food. But cooking at home.
What about seafood?
Seafood, I mean, not great.
I just love calamari with a little aioli.
No, I love red meat.
Uh-huh.
I love red meat. that's it. I love red meat. this is from Hayley Smith, and she has said, what is your go-to breakfast if you have guests over?
If I have guests over?
Yes.
Bacon and eggs, really.
Bacon and eggs. Now, somehow, I don't think your bacon and eggs are the same as my bacon and eggs.
Well, okay, let's break it down here. Depends what we're doing.
Okay. So we've been out the night before.
Okay, definitely bacon and eggs then.
There's like four or five of us. We're all sitting around the table. We're all kind of hungover. The weather's not great outside. We're like, Nico, come on, cook us a bit of breakfast.
Get on that.
And someone's picking the movie. We'll watch a movie afterwards.
Oh, this sounds like a nice day.
You know, tea. There's pots of tea going. Yes. And we're all sitting around.
Don't stop.
Yes, setting the mood.
What are we watching? Yeah. I don't like usually those situations. There's not a lot in the house, is there? Maybe something like a nice little frittata. See, like I don't like my as flavored as like my lunches and meals are. I try to keep my breakfast like quite simple.
Yeah.
Not for the idea of fumbling around the kitchen, but you don't want that intensity when you're just up.
Yes. How are you serving your eggs?
So this is the thing. Someone asked me that the other day, actually. So if I serve them to myself, I do them fried. And if I serve them to other people, I scramble.
Yeah. Okay. Do you add anything in for a scramble?
No, so you just with a little bit of butter and coconut oil and some salt and pepper.
Very good. Can I tell you my breakfast that I make everyone that over? It's courgette French toast.
Talk to me.
Yes. So it goes like this, Nico. Now, if I see this popping up in a Nico cookbook in the next 5 or 10 years, okay, I'm coming for you.
What if I say, what if I give you a...
give me a cut, no problem. If I see this on the menu in Little Porties next week...
There's deals to be done here.
Goes something like this. So...
I start rapping.
You get your eggs and you... So you get a courgette.
Okay.
You get... a grater.
Okay.
And
is that the sign for grater?
This is the grater.
Okay.
You put a little bit of butter on the pan.
Sounds
melt
good.
The butter.
And which is so far?
You grate the courgette, maybe just a quarter of a courgette into the pan.
Mm.
Fry it off a little bit while that's going.
Yeah.
You get four eggs. You beat them up.
Okay.
Beating them with cayenne pepper, ooh, salt and pepper, a little bit of garlic, and some cinnamon.
Oh, yeah.
I know, Shane. It's a strange mix, but work with me. And then I get some protein powder because I'm all about that added protein.
Okay.
And we're going to get it in. I know you're probably like, you've just ruined it.
No, I'm taking a deep breath. That's it.
Okay. So I've taken the protein powder back out. You whisk everything.
Wait. Where's the protein powder going? In the eggs?
In the eggs.
Okay.
You're whisking it all.
What flavor? Doesn't...
So there's no flavor on the protein powder.
Okay.
It's not like I'm putting a bloody, like, you know, orange flavor.
Yeah, or like no. Moroccan sunset or something.
No, there's no flavor on it. It's literally just going to be extra protein and also... a thickening agent for my eggs.
Okay, girl, I got you.
So then I will put in a little bit of chia seeds, Mills chia seeds, just because health. And then I would whisk everything. And then I get my bread. Now, might break your heart here, but I use a gluten-free bread.
That doesn't break my heart at all.
So I am soaking the bread, my courgette. Stop laughing at my hand movements.
I need to keep a straight face, all right?
Okay. I'm soaking the bread. And then I put the bread on the pan, on the bar, so it goes onto the courgette.
Okay.
So then you put your added eggs, just pour it over the top, right? So then you're flipping it, and it's building, you know, it's soaking, the egg is soaked into the bread. Uh-huh. So it's like, you know, nice and thick now. It's browning off. When it's done, grab your plates. Yeah. Honey.
Honey?
Honey. And then grated Parmesan over the top.
Wow.
Et voila. The breakfast of champions. My ad.
Wow. Okay.
Is that not a fantastic breakfast?
Yeah. I'm just. yeah.
What am I lacking? What am I missing?
Nothing. That's there's a lot there. Honey.
You know why, honey? I went on a staycation a year ago to Dingle. And
did they exist before COVID?
Yeah, they did. They do when you work in media and you haven't got a bean to your name. But we went to Dingle, and there was a little pub, and at the back of it, there was this really young family, and they had moved from like somewhere else in the west of Ireland to Dingle every summer. Mm. And the dad has a little trailer, and he makes pizzas in this like oven clay thing, so it was delicious. But he'd done pepperoni pizza, and he had it drizzled with honey, and ever since then I was like, cheese, honey, bread.
I'm not against that combination.
Honey over the pepperoni pizza drizzled. Listen, don't knock it.
I'd try it.
Yeah. Oh, you have to try it. I could remember the name of the pizza, because it was absolutely delicious. It was really, really good. Okay, anyway, less about my pizza antics and more about you. So this is from Tia Murphy, and she has asked, do you read, and if so, what books do you recommend?
I do read. I'm currently reading first sci-fi book I've ever read.
Oh.
Super interesting book. It was like one, like the Nobel Peace Prize equivalent, the Chinese. So it's translated from Chinese.
Okay.
But it's this such an interesting concept. It's about this like advanced alien race that have sent a message to Earth, and they've given Earth like 400 light years, and they say, listen, we're coming, we're going to wipe you out, we're going to colonize Earth. So it's about the planet like forming over 400 years, like all the different societies have together. Some people want to be differently fractured into like, let them come, let them destroy us, we need to be wiped out. So people, no, we must fight back. So it's just kind of, it's kind of an allegory for what's going on at the Earth at the moment with everything. So it's like 400 years of Earth just forming a civilization around this problem. It's called the three-body problem. But it was the first book I ever read. Like, I love, something has always fascinated me about war.
Yeah.
It is like the eternal theater of suffering of human mankind, but we continue to trudge through it. So I like reading first-hand war accounts. I think I got that from a young age. I got it from my father. He was always, he loved the Vietnam War, and I have a fascination with World War One and the Napoleonic era wars, and then Evil War, and just how fellow man can do that to each other and continue to do it.
Yes,
there's always something to fascinate, because I just,
and for what?
Well, for me, it's always the side of just extraordinary people or extraordinary circumstances, ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's like, what do you do when the Nazis come knocking on your door? You just this is the question, kind of just like, I have no idea. Would I take up a gun? Would I take up an arms? It's like, yeah. It's easy for these things to say until
fight or flight.
Yeah. So I read a lot of those kind of books. I love philosophy. I like different types. I flirting around with stoicism for about 2 years, and then I kind of not grew out of it, but then it was it kind of gets a bit wooden.
Yeah.
that it's just you're kind of your shit. There's that's why I think it's kind of more attractive to men. Mm-hmm. To males, that it's definitely useful.
Yeah, it is very male driven though, isn't it?
Yeah,
the new age of kind of stoicism is very.
Yeah, is it a new age though? Really, it's been like
with this kind of like resurgence where it's sort of like.
Well, this is it. Well, like stoicism comes out of like the Hellenic times when they were having a different leader every year and the tribe would come and take away your family and then an earthquake could just knock you down and it was hard to... That's the time when it's useful, when everything's kind of crumbling around you.
Yeah.
You can control what you think. So that's probably what the resurgence is. It's hard not to have that feeling at the moment that that civilization is just crumbling around you.
I'm with you there. Okay, final question. Then we'll let you leave because you've been very gracious with your time. This is from, where are we? Linda Davenport. And she has said, I am loving watching you on Living with Lucy, Lounging with Lucy.
Lodging
with Lucy. God. who has been your favourite guest so far in doing the show? Obviously, there's episodes that we haven't seen yet, isn't there?
Yeah. So... It was also different.
Can we just point out what Shane said?
Yeah, that's big fan. That's so funny.
It was absolutely Ian Dempsey. Yeah. Like, he said it already.
No, but it's been so funny. It's all been so different and varied. Everyone's had different life experiences. But for me personally, with the Paul McGrath one
I watched.
Yeah, it was an extra special one for me. I mean, if you asked me 2 years ago, who'd you like to cook for? I would have said Paul McGrath. Would have been at the table. Absolutely. Because I remember, like I said to it on the show, and there's a few things that I said that kind of, you know, you're chatting backstage. But, you know, you grew up in Ireland and, you know, there wasn't a lot of people of my hue in growing up in Ireland at the time. And you see someone donning the Irish jersey and going out and not only putting on the jersey, but doing everything in his power to make that jersey stand out and bring us to the World Cup and back. I kind of had that resonance with him that, you know, had the Paul McGrath jerseys and everything like everyone did. But there was that kind of extra, you know, you're in a crowd of 45,000 people and you're all singing the same song, but there's just that slight little disconnect and you kind of see Paul McGrath coming on the pitch. And I remember I said to him on the day, it was, I was like, listen, as we just said there about half an hour ago, that what Ireland is going to be in maybe 50, 60 years, and people are going to look back on people like you and Phil Lynott and say, like, you know, this is where kind of where it's not, yeah, I suppose where it started, but people are going to have something to look back on. And, yeah, no, it's one of the things that, no, my face is done, but the face doesn't match the Freedom Fighters, the Pierces, or the Wolf Tones and everything else. But, and it's just, I think, kind of, you feel included, you know, and he's always kind of made me feel that.
Hey, that's so lovely to hear you say that, because obviously I can't relate to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just such a, that's why sport is so important, or that's why diversity in sport and entertainment is so important, because we get to, our children, our youth get to look at TV and see themselves, or to see something that resonates with them, that allows them to then go on to achieve or to believe that they can achieve anything in their life.
For sure.
So good. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
That was a good chat.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I was just because, geez, I haven't sat down in a while and just had a chat with someone.
Yeah.
We
kind of covered a lot of ground there.
Got a lot done.
Yeah, it was really good. But yeah, thank you so much for coming in.
No, I appreciate the call.
You're welcome. That is it. It's a big one. Episode 50. Shane was meant to bring them, but he's so sick. Well, we do have a bottle of whiskey. Yeah, it was really good as well.
I suppose that'll do.
I think it's nearly half gone there. But thank you so much for joining us for the 50th episode of The First Exchange.
Oh, my pleasure.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.